All right, let's move on to item 11, which Tim is yours, and that's a presentation on the liquidity sub-portfolio.
I'll make this brief and then you can stop listening to me for a little bit here. This is part of our annual refreshing of the investment portfolio. We take a look about this time every year and say, as we get closer to July when we do our big rebalancing, what's going to be the size of that new tranche of liquidity payments for the next third year? So we fund to 3 years every July. We draw down over the course of the year to, we'll end at 2 years and we fill back up to three. And so the way we do this is we get actuarial projections. We break those out on a month by month basis. And then we take a look at what's going on in the short duration fixed income markets, what we think we could buy securities at today, and then we discount back at the current yield. So in today's market environment, let me just go to page two of the memo. We're at about $1.3 billion in the liquidity program today. We'll have another $186 million flowing out. We've taken a look at that new 2024-2025 tranche of benefit payments. And we think we can buy into that at about a 3.5% yield in today's market environment. And so keep this in mind that these markets are all in motion right now. Your actuarial projections are not in motion. Those are locked in. But the prices in the fixed income markets are the thing that is the variable here. But we do see opportunity to buy at about 3.5% yield, which would give us a present value for that new third year of benefit payment tranche of about $600 million. So we project out that come July, with the refreshing of the liquidity program, it would be about $1.7 billion. Now, the reason we do this is the liquidity program is always sized in dollars. It's sized in actual benefit payments and what we think we can fund those at current rates in the fixed income environment. But obviously, when we do asset allocation, those are all sized in percentage allocations. So we run through this exercise and say we're going to need $1.74 billion in liquidity program. Based upon what we're seeing in today's market, we think that's going to be, roughly 16.2% of total fund come July. So take this with a grain of salt because these markets are moving on us here, both in terms of yields and in terms of returns in the public markets. But this is kind of the rough justice number, 16%. This is just for advisory purposes only, and it feeds into the capital market assumptions that Scott's going to walk through next. But that's the process we come up with. It says 3 years of benefit payments is 16% of total fund right now. This is going to get codified over the next month in terms of an actual asset allocation resolution and then the rebalancing in July. So this is just kind of the input into the next agenda item.
All right. So I see a hand up. Jay Kwan, you had a question or comment for Tim.
I'm sorry. I'll be brief here, but just wanted to pencil out some stuff. On this page here, you're saying to buy back the discounted year three is about $600 million. Most of the funding from that comes from the annual prepayment, right? The $310 million line in there. And then where's the difference come from?
So we'll talk about that in the annual funding plan next month. But I think right now what we're looking at is probably roughly $300 million coming in through prepayments. We have had record distributions both from private equity and from real estate. So we have extra cash that's currently being overlaid right now. So we would be deploying that cash. And then we would go through any necessary rebalancing throughout the risk assets, throughout the growth portfolio to come up with the rest of the money there. But there will be another document coming out next month that will lay out those in a little bit more granular terms.
Okay. And this is just kind of a weirder intersection between the actuarial concepts and the investment returns. But, coming out of COVID, a lot of plans had these bang up outperformance years. And an interesting consequence of that is kind of, netted out a lot of UAL payments coming from sponsors. And so on a cash flow perspective, the kind of cash outflows from the plans increased because contributions coming in from the sponsor decreased, right? And so how variable is that kind of, estimated pre- employer prepayment amount of 310 or so. How variable is that, and does it cause you issues if that swings around a lot?
So it has not been highly variable, and I think some of that has been the smoothing effect that goes into the actuarial numbers. I will say what we are looking at is the county is paying off their POB in the next couple of years here. I forget what year it is exactly, but that will affect the cash flow numbers coming in. But I think in terms of it's been in the 295 to 310 range, so it has not moved around dramatically.
Okay, thanks for that. It's just the kind of it's always interesting to see how, you know, the plan is getting a little bit riskier. So investment returns are going to get a little more variable. And then that'll kind of hit the plan in terms of fluctuating contribution amounts later. I like the intersection there between the investment and actuarial concepts.
Yeah, it's a somewhat uneasy intersection for the actuaries, but I think it's important that we on the investment team have a good grasp of the liabilities and, you know, a focus on what these assets need to be doing.
Great, thanks.
So question, Tim, this may, well, I'm not sure there's any dumb question, but if our investment policy and FFP had a 2-year horizon for benefits payments as opposed to 3, mm-hmm. would that enable us, you, to be more opportunistic and less constrained in terms of, you know, any opportunistic decision making that you would make regarding this particular portfolio? And I ask because you were, maybe it's obvious, but when you're thinking out to that third year, in the market environment we're in now, with all of the tumult and volatility and difficulty, trying to figure out what works on the year 3 piece seems challenging to me, I guess is what I would say. So I guess my question is, if we went to a 2-year instead of a 3-year benefit payment hold, would that be a better situation from the standpoint of opportunistic investing? That's the question.
Oh, boy. How to answer that one? I guess my initial reaction would be it wouldn't necessarily lead to more opportunistic scenarios, but you would certainly have more assets exposed to other categories other than liquidity. So I think when we take a look at this and say, you know, we need to go out and fund that new third year, and what's going on in the short duration fixed income markets, while they're clearly moving around, let's remember this is short duration fixed income. It's not going to move around dramatically. So I think the scenario where, hey, we're looking to fund that new tranche, it's just a matter of waiting until we get a little bit closer to the actual, you know, investment to do a final sizing on, you know, what do we think the discount is going to be associated with funding this. That part doesn't move around so much. If we had more, if we had a smaller liquidity program of 2 years, there would just be more assets for other pieces of it. So there's more, I'd say a bigger opportunity set. But, you know, and the reason I'm a little leery about answering the question is we just kind of did this analysis, a year and a half ago, and said, you know, we were moving from 4 to 3. So I think, you know, in terms of our battleship comments today, we don't want to necessarily move on those pieces kind of outside of the typical asset liability review cycle, unless something has dramatically changed in the world. And we're just not in that scenario today. So, you know, short answer, there would be more assets available. But, you know, it wouldn't necessarily, you know, change the way we run the investment portfolio.
Okay.
It probably wouldn't change how you look at opportunistic investing, because those assets would be split between growth and diversifying. And so they would be invested somewhere else. When a tactical opportunity arises, you will have to, regardless, figure out where to pull it from. And it could come from liquidity, tactical, or other growth assets that have held up. So I'm not sure that I'm not making the logical connection between lower benefits funding and higher opportunistic investing.
Well, no one ever said I was logical, but I think, and I appreciate both thoughts and comments. And I know this, I'm not trying to be untimely in the decision-making. We'll cross this bridge when we come to it. I just felt that to me, I mean, I guess the short observation is that it just, two years versus three makes for a bigger battleship, depending upon where the, you know, which part of the ship you extend or widen. And within that, it seems to me that it increases the opportunities for opportunity. It increases the likelihood of opportunity occurring within one or both of those strategies. Who knows? It's speculative. But as I say, enough of that. I guess we'll cross that bridge when we get to it in the normal time frame. Not advocating for anything different in the interim. So. Okay.
All right. Just last point for me on this. So the 16% target is 2% less than we were looking at last year. That's based both on increase in overall asset base of the fund, and the increased yields allow us to, brings down the present value of that tranche. So that leaves 2% to be reallocated. And that happens through Verisk's review of capital market assumptions. So with that, I'll wrap up my comments on agenda item 11. And if there's no trustee comments, I think we can move forward to 12.
All right. In the absence of any other trustee comments, and I don't see any currently listed.